Think back 1 year to July 28th, 2019. In fact, I invite you to look at exactly what you were doing then. Were you at work? Were you on vacation? Were you changing jobs? Were you at camp? It's a good chance you were somewhere else, somewhere other than home, somewhere other than where you are now. But fix that in time. I mean, look back in your calendar, see what you were doing then. And imagine if somebody came to you with a crystal ball and said, hey, you want to know what life will be like exactly 1 year from now, on July 28th, 2020? Tell us what you think is going on then. And you're likely to have an answer like, well, let's see. You're going to make it basically a linear progression from all of life that you've experienced up to that point, add a year to it, and say, well, probably in the baseball season will be fairly settled. It might even be the Dodgers and some other, maybe the Red Sox now. The Lakers won the NBA playoffs. If we look at politics, Trump is on his way to another term in the White House, much as most of the country doesn't want that, but he's a leader and the economy's good. And generally when the economy's good, the leader, whoever they are, tends to get reelected. So that's not a safe bet, but looking good.
Their life is going on. You know, it's like today, only a year out, right?
And what if the person bringing you the crystal ball said, okay, look here. Here's what July 28, 2020 will be like. You have no job. You're living in a hole with a few other people or by yourself. The hole may be your house, it may be some other place. There are no sports. Almost no sports. The NBA has just started up, isolated inside something they call the bubble in Orlando. Baseball has started up again, but nobody is in the stands. Sports for months have been canceled. The world is not at war, but China is ascendant because it has extreme competence at both socialism and capitalism and is very determined to take over everything it can as gently as it can. They've stepped on Hong Kong and moved up their occupation and the end of the, one state, two systems, and that's going away. Air travel has almost completely ceased. There is not the sound of airplanes in the sky. There are a few contrails up there. Airports are largely abandoned, except for essential travel. U.S. residents are not welcome in the rest of the world. We're not welcoming people from elsewhere either, but not because Trump doesn't like immigrants, but because we don't want their disease. Though, in fact, the U.S. has the worst case itself of the disease, which is a pandemic called COVID-19, a form of coronavirus, something you never heard of a year ago, the day you're hearing this news now. And that in the United States alone, over 150,000 people have died. This is more people than were killed at Hiroshima or Nagasaki. This is more people than died in the Vietnam and the Korean War put together. This is, 50 9/11s put together. But the upset isn't the same because it didn't happen all at once. It happened on the installment plan. There's a fairly good chance that you at least know somebody who knows somebody who has died of COVID-19. You're afraid of it. So is pretty much everybody. When you go on the streets or in public places, almost everybody is wearing a mask
to keep from either getting an infection or giving it to somebody else. There are serious estimates that up to a quarter of the private colleges and universities are going to die in the next few years. There's serious thought going into alternative forms of education and self-education. Like, who needs college? Who needs the college experience when it costs you $80,000 a year that you're going to have to pay back over many years to obtain a credential that may or may not matter in the world that we're making now or having to remake now? Would you think this was even plausible? It's an interesting question. If we go back to the moment that we're in now, which is at the far end of those prognostications, we're only in the beginning of whatever this is. We've only begun to see what the cascading effects of a pandemic and precautions against a pandemic and coping with a pandemic are. How do you do business and governance and education and being social? How can the UK or a lot of the US have a pub culture when you can't even go to the pub and all the pubs are closed? The thought of all the pubs being closed in the UK is almost unthinkable, but it's a fact right now. I think that there's nothing more important than getting two kinds of perspective. One is on the delta between the life that we had and the civilization we had and what we're experiencing now, and the many deltas between where we are now and where we are going to have to go, whether we like it or not, because we have experienced the effects of this pandemic, and not of just the disease itself, but of the ways we've coped with it, some of which are crazy and some of which are quite sane, and many of which have been entirely experimental because the full nature of this disease is not understood. We know polio really well. We know many kinds of flu very well. We do not know the full range of effects of COVID-19 and what it does to our bodies and what it does to our institutions and how our institutions have to cope. And perhaps more importantly, thinking about pandemics in general and where they and how they work in the world. We have more ways than ever right now of spreading disease. Those have been cut back at the moment. We may never go back to the endlessly complex forms of travel that we had. We may never go back to having the forms of hotels that we had. People right now are going to motels. Motels were almost out of business. If you watch the series Schitt's Creek, which is entirely set in a motel, I don't want to give away the ending of it, but a part of it is that there is anticipated a resurgence in the motel business. And sure enough, this has happened. Not for the reasons imagined in that series, which is a comic series, but because hotels with hallways and places for people to gather and send and exchange germs with each other, and that depend on expense accounts in businesses that don't even have offices anymore. The change is completely radical, and we're being delusional if we think that institutions such as air travel and higher education and hospitality and transportation and business and offices, you know, the kind you get dressed for and go to when you go to work, are ever going to be the same as they were is just delusional at this point. But how are they going to be? What's going to happen to those spaces? I am staying, my hole right now is in a friend's house. They have a bigger house than they need. Our house is
for different reasons unavailable to us now. And I don't want to go into the whole story. Everybody's got a different story about this, but I am in need of an office chair. And so I looked online for my favorite kinds of office chairs, which are Herman Miller's. And there was a kind called Ergon that was out in the 70s and 80s that had cushions. And I really like those, but those are, none have been made in a long time. And they're all pretty elderly at this point. But the more common type is the Herman Miller Aeron. And so I looked on Craigslist today in the Los Angeles area, which is where I happen to be at the moment. And the number and variety of sources of countless, I'm not kidding, countless Herman Miller Aeron chairs is enormous. And that's because office companies are unloading these things. People aren't coming back. The same thing happened, by the way, after the crash in the economic recession in 2008. A lot of Herman Miller furniture was available at that time. It's going to be much bigger now. You know, what? Who's going to go to work in these places for a long time? How's that going to go? How are we going to be, you know, how are sports going to sustain? I mean, right now, sports is being sustained by advertising for the most part, rather than by fans paying for seats. But the companies doing the advertising are going to look at their expenses, and a lot of them, and say, do we really need to advertise on to spend the money? It's speculative money. You can show a return on investment, but for the most, but you know, when you're losing money, and you're losing employees and you're laying people off, are you going to be spending millions of dollars on advertising that you could have be spending on hiring people to improve the business that you already have that you're just trying to hold on to? There are some exceptions. I think that insurance is looking good. And I think they're actually the most important business in the world right now, because what do? They assess risk as a matter of course, right? So what are they seeing? And what do they not want to say because they don't want to give it up to their competitors, right? It's an interesting question, but we have to be looking forward in a way that anticipates the cascading effects of what we're experiencing right now, and not through the political lens, and because it's just too much sports, it's just too full of gossip. And not through the selfish lens of what's it going to mean to me. One of the biggest problems that we've had in trying to cope with this pandemic is looking at it from a selfish perspective. You know, I don't need to wear a mask because I'm safe, I'm young, or, I mean, whatever reason you might have for not wearing a mask. Now we know. I mean, wearing masks as a population helps. We're seeing this. We know enough to know that now. But thinking selfishly is not helped out. It has not helped out, and it won't help out in the future. How do we think unselfishly? The part that I'm interested in, and I'm looking for help with this, in the form of information that I hopefully you can share with me, which is, how are customers helping businesses? Not just how businesses are helping themselves by doing innovative things. That's what business always wants to talk about, its own innovations. But what if customers come to business and said, you know what, if you worked on this one thing that you don't have right now, but you could, you're a restaurant, here are some other things you could be making right now, and these people you could be hiring to do this kind of thing that might help out. You might try using this form of, I'm just making this up, by the way, this form of social media. You could talk to these people and get something out of this. You know, a lot of people are exercising now in ways they didn't before. What can you, here's some ideas for that, for talking to those people who are on the road running around or walking around and getting them water on the trip. I'm just making this stuff literally out of the blue. But in the curb weight of knowledge about a business, nobody knows more than the customers. Nobody. Customers know more. They have much more experience with your product and with your service. And the systems you've got for dealing with customers, which are your call centers and your message machine or your email or your social media account or whatever it is. You know, even the people who, you know, that you have on staff that help customers all the time don't know your business as well as those customers do. You know, if you're a restaurant, what are the things that you've always offered because grandma made it, but, you know, the customers really don't like it that much, or think that, you know what, you're cooking the tomato sauce too long. You're leaving it on the stove too long. It's getting a bitter taste. Quit scraping the sides. I'm just making this up again. There's so many things that customers know that businesses don't. We need to start institutionalizing this. We need to start providing customers generally with ways that they can interact with businesses that are not complaining, that are actually helpful, because that is the big thing right now. We need to help each other, and not just because we're being good, progressive, or caring people, but because that's what's going to make the world better. That's what's going to employ more people. That's what's going to make the world work better. But we have to think out there and disentangle ourselves from gossip. And I'm here to tell you 99.99% of what you read every day on the net, what you watch on the news, amounts to gossip. And this is not a wrong thing. This is a very human thing. Yuval Noah Harari, in his book Sapiens, talked about this, that he believes, and I think he's right, that a great deal of what made our species what it is was gossip. It's you needed to know who in the tribe was strong, who was good at planting berries, who was good at understanding the seasons and whatever else it was. You know, who could you get together to move these rocks? Who knew the way through the woods? Who spoke the language of the next tribe? That was gossip, and. We need the constructive kind of that. Have you heard this or have you heard that that's helpful? How can we be helpful? One of my mother's lessons to my sister and I when we were small, and I passed it on to our kids as well, it was at any moment in time in your life, you face a choice between hurting and helping. How do you help? How can you help? There's more to help now than ever before. How do you do that? And it may help right now to get out the crystal ball that you can't see into and imagine July 28th, 2021, and not what in the world is going to be happening now in sports and entertainment and religion and government and business than is happening now, but rather what of consequence have I been able to do to help make the better world that we have now? A world is better in some ways, in which we didn't just gossip about how it went to hell here or went to hell there, or that, oh, geez, looks like my college really is going to go out of business, or, boy, how are we going to deal with this or that, but rather, and we'll have all of those things, but rather, what did I do in the last year to help make the world the better place it partly is today? So I just wanted to give you that. I had tried two audio blogcasts on my blog a few weeks ago to, for the most part, no effect whatsoever. And that's not a knock on that. It was an experiment. I think what I had to talk about was not especially relevant to most people, and they were academic topics of a kind I'm curious about, but kind of irrelevant to what we're in right now. And, you know, I forget who said it. It was Samuel Johnson, I think, that nothing will focus one's mind like the gallows, you know, and that's really where we kind of are right now. We're seeing a lot of death. We have the knowledge that any one of us could get or pass on this disease to somebody easily. And that, you know, that
that gives us a bit of a sense of the gallows. It may not be our gallows, but it's somebody's, maybe. Chances are not zero. They're well above zero. They're closer to zero than 100, but they are above zero. And that's relevant in our lives. We can't get away from that. So what good can we do? That's really what it is. How can we help rather than hurt? So I'll leave you with that, and good luck to you.